within the electoral arena, recognizing that the electoral arena is not the best place for the expression of radical politics. But if we want to continue this work, we certainly need a person in office who will be more amenable to our mass pressure. And to me, that is the only thing that someone like Joe Biden represents. But we have to persuade people to go out and vote to guarantee that the current occupant of the White House is forever ousted.
Angela Davis, I want to thank you so much for this hour. World-renowned abolitionist, author, activist, professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz, author of many books, including Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of Movement. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
KBOO Portland.
And like the magic voice said, this is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's time, I remind you once again, to mind the gap, as girls are powerful.
Oh, that's right, that's right. It is The Gap. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's Friday, and my name is Tammy. On the line with me is the majestic, the jubilant, the can I call you aromatic? Is that even a thing? Oh, well, I guess that makes you sound like you're musty, which you're not. I'll see you later, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, hello.
You're welcome.
Aromatic would be hard to say because we haven't seen each other in some time. Can't vouch for what I've got going on.
A child's laughter or scent the morning dew, I think of you.
That's so sweet. And I'm so happy to be here this morning on Mind the Gap.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here as well. Yesterday was quite a day here in Portland Town with the city council, the city council committee, the city council meeting, with the police bureau defunding, and just so many things over the last week, 2 weeks. So we are going to touch upon those things. And then also we are going to be talking about the, I don't know if this is the right way of phrasing it, but the TikTok family exposed videos and the different online social media videos that have been shared mostly amongst people in their 20s and younger, teenagers also, you know, people living at home who basically have to deal with super racist family members and they're exposing them on the internet for people to see, you know, how to combat it or just what they have to deal with and also the type of things that people deal with, because there is definitely a age difference, you know, from the people that we're seeing that are currently protesting and demonstrating and showing up. So those are kind of the things that we're going to be talking about. But Althea, I know that we talked about, you recently did, was it a seminar or a webinar that was about language, and we were talking about the language around defunding the police and how that is seeming to be becoming a little problematic and, surprise, surprise, politicized. So would you like to touch upon that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. It's a thing for journalists to not use the proper language when describing stuff. And so some of that goes to like the difference between protesting and rioting, and that it really does have an impact on how people, you know, view whatever movement it is you're talking about. But I actually ended up getting feedback from a listener who suggested that we shouldn't describe it as defunding the police, but use some different kind of word because people are taking that and politicizing it. And, you know, it's one of those things that I can understand on like a surface level, like looking at that and not thinking about it in a complex way. It's like, what do you mean take the police's money away? What, they don't have cars now? They don't have uniforms? How are they supposed to do their job? And that it sounds pretty radical, and it really is, but what it's really saying is the police and the money that we spend on them is not the best use of our resources to address the problems that we have. And whether that, I mean, in Portland, we've grappled with that in regards outside of racial justice, with the DOJ settlement on how the Portland police were found to be using excess force in dealing with people in mental health crisis. But there were some statistics published recently, just in like the first quarter of 2020, of what were police used for? What calls did they get? And a vast majority of them are welfare checks or disturbances or those sorts of things that, you know, the skill set of a cop is not the best way to deal with those. And as we've seen time and time again, those kinds of checks on your neighbor, or hey, somebody's making a lot of noise, cops entering into that situation, one, aren't trained for it, and two, are trained from a system that, you know, ends up killing people of color, specifically Black people. And so that is not like an outcome that we want, right? People don't trust the police. The police are militarized because of, you know, the end of the Cold War. Don't need to totally get into that, but police budgets have really ballooned, and so have their responsibilities. Once upon a time, it wasn't the job of police to deal with somebody who is, you know, dealing with an addiction issue or somebody who's in mental health crisis. There were other resources that took precedent on those issues, or we weren't dealing with those issues. And what defunding the police would like to say is, hey, we want to do better on all of these different areas. And for so long, all of these, you know, like nonprofits and stuff, that deal with this kind of things, I think of like the Sobering Station downtown that closed, like all of these advocacy groups that deal directly with the problem have long suffered without adequate funds. And would you look and see that we found the funding, the police, and what the amount that they're paid, the amount of people on staff, specifically in Portland, the different teams, quote-unquote teams, that deal with different things, the level of military equipment. There is a great old Last Week Tonight video talking about the militarization of police, of like local police departments can purchase tanks if they want to. Like, there's not a law against that, and the you know, the U.S. military has to get rid of their equipment somehow. And so that defunding the police doesn't mean that when someone breaks into your house, that there's not going to be a way to resolve that. It just sort of is reimagining law enforcement in such a way that isn't tied up in everything that it's tied up in right now. It doesn't mean that, you know, white collar crime is going to not get busted. It just means that the ways in which the police don't work and we're throwing money at the problem we should redirect that into things that we actually know work.
I wonder why the defunding was kind of like the choice that, you know, people went with while campaigning for this, as opposed to, because I noticed at first it was definitely defund the police, and now it's slowly changing to redirect or divest, or, you know, different words that don't make it sound as though it's, oh, we don't have money, we aren't going to have cops, period, like that's it. So I wonder why that was chosen to begin with. It may have done a disservice in the informational campaign, because just seeing that word in itself could jar people who would otherwise be moderates, or even just not dig deeper into it just because they see that word there. But to your point, as to like redirect, the finances, after looking at what cops are actually called, you know, what crimes or what causes people to call the police, it just makes no sense to call the cops for an instance when you need like a social worker, simply because that's not their job. They are not social workers. It's like, we can't tell as a military to go instill democracy somewhere, because they aren't democracy instillers, they're soldiers, you know. It's just not their job. It needs to be a whole, it's not their training, and it's almost it's ludicrous that you would expect, you know, when you teach someone to respond to, you know, to a situation with violence, that they would do something else when that's what they've been taught. So the conversation yesterday with the city council, and also the day before yesterday, went on for 2 days, and I think it was about 75 people or 45 people that spoke yesterday, and it was pretty much unanimous. And the city did call for a immediate $50 million, I don't want to say defunding or redirecting. The commissioners and the mayor ended up voting, I think it was 27.5 million, which is about half of that. So, you know, there's still, activists say that there's still a long way to go, but it's a big first step in the initial steps that, you know, when all this was kind of percolating, it was about 7 million that Ted Wheeler wanted to give to Black and, you know, African American and Black community organizations, and took it back, and now we'll be putting more in there. So, and then also there was the cannabis tax revenue, which was going to the police department, which I didn't know. That's pretty, I don't know if that's ironic or if that's an allegory or if that's a fable or something, but it seems kind of silly and like odd that is a revenue stream for the police department, but it no longer is. And then, of course, there's a conversation around the resource officers in schools. So all in all, it seemed like things are moving, and people were really empowered. You could tell that people were very empowered, and I think that goes to, you know, speak volumes of the campaign that was happening, like, instantly, you know, from Don't Shoot Portland and other, organizers like that. Did you happen to hear any of the people speaking? I know Sonia, who's our board op, thank you so much again for being there, was board oping and pretty much killed it yesterday, so thank you so much for doing that. There are a lot of questions, I gotta say. Quite amazing to hear people voice themselves like that. So now, you have any takes from the meeting?
Well, there was a lot. It sounded like it came to No, I'm sorry, you kind of caught me unawares. I don't really have my thoughts together right now. Why don't y'all keep talking?
Oh, I can definitely do that.
But I did have this though.
Okay,
Someone you were talking about. You were asking, wondering how did they come to, how did organizers behind this notion choose the term defund when it's seems so rife for misinterpretation, whether from misunderstanding or deliberate and like malicious. And I came across a post the other day. Oh gosh, it says, "Defund the police does not mean eliminate all police funding. Defund the police means police will be funded, police will not be overfunded. Redistribute the city budget. Defund the police because police should focus on crime and criminals. Police are not mental health counselors. Police are not social workers. Police are not medical professionals. Police are not education specialists. Police should not be responsible for everything. Defund the police emphasizes reassessing our values, investing in our communities, investing in our people, funding our schools, funding our hospitals, funding our services, funding our infrastructure." Presenting defunding the police as the same as eliminating all funding for the police is intentionally misleading and manipulative. But defund the police is a lot easier to say than all of that.
I get
a similar
that.
Thing about yeah. how, why many folks marching in the streets say no justice, no peace, because that's a lot quicker and easier to say in a group altogether than peace is the natural result of justice. And when you don't have justice, you cannot have peace. When one side of a conflict is forcibly subdued, that's not resolving the conflict. And so you don't have peace resulting from that. Justice results from when parties to a conflict all have their voices, are all heard. Everyone gets to say what everyone gets to make their case, and everyone listens, and everyone gets to participate meaningfully in the fair and equitable resolution of the conflict. And again, no justice, no peace is a lot easier to say than all of that.
A little bit catchier, I agree. Just a little bit. And then being so saturated with information, it's overly saturated, and being able to manipulate something just from the way that what the campaign is called, or being so kind of like myopic. I don't want to say myopic, but it could be very jarring, especially for people who have never thought of that way of a different way of life from what we know, which now as we're seeing, by the millions, it's not just Portland, it's not just Pacific Northwest, it's not just America, it's the whole world. And I think a lot of people are ready for a change, and to manipulate that is kind of, I don't know, in my opinion, kind of evil. But things are happening, and people are combating misinformation. I want to again shout out Don't Shoot Portland for all the amazing work that they've been doing, like immediately, just hit the ground running. Like, of course they've been doing it for years, but more so in the last few weeks, they've just been, organizing and getting people together, and so much information that that they're sharing. So that's been a big place of mine where I'm getting resources from live demonstrations and different things like that, and different places to donate and stuff like that. So all in all, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to mention that they were responsible for the court case that currently has a 2-week injunction on the Portland police using tear gas on protesters. That was
right.
Shoot PDX as well.
Exactly. What and how did that come from? Just them, or did that? Because that's a pretty huge thing to do for a body of, just individuals. Well, there's nothing we can't do, as a people, but that's huge.
Yeah, it was them, and I believe the other plaintiffs were people who had been tear gassed at the protest. I don't think it's a final decision, because it's only sort of like 2 weeks while they discover more things about it, but that, the judge came out and said I think folks on Twitter and who have been following the protest closely probably are aware of, that the use of tear gas is not really connected to, you know, like a life and death situation, typically. And, you know, this idea that, oh, no, we only tear gas people to keep them from doing the bad thing. It's like, no, they were trying to obey a police order and get away from the demonstration and got tear gassed anyway.
Hearing a lot of the people that were, you know, just try to leave, you know, the demonstrations on their way home, and they just get caught in. I mean, it's a setup, really. You know, it's pretty much just trapping them and pretty violent means of subduing the public. But that's a huge. I think that's a huge win. And there's also in Seattle, there's the autonomous zone, which you seem pretty stoked about.
Well, I got family up in Seattle. My little sister is going up there today, hopefully. It's a very, like, interesting thing. If you haven't heard of the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, basically, in Capitol Hill, which is a neighborhood in Seattle, there's the Seattle Police's East Precinct, which I think sometime last week actually was abandoned by the police. They boarded it up. They moved out of there. And protesters have claimed about, I think, like between a 3 and a 6 block radius, and call it the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, that food's free, free music, free drinks. They are, you know, helping people, what's the word, recover after protests. And they're screening documentaries at night. There's like medical help there. It's very interesting to me. And it's funny, my little sister, just to see like the glint in her eye when she talks about it and how cool it is.
Wow. Is she, has she been there yet?
Yeah.
How does she describe it as far as like age groups, and is it, you know, is it violent or anything like that?
It's not, it's very peaceful from what I understand from her. And that, you know, compare that to other demonstrations that she's been going to where there really is police presence, to be somewhere without it is notable, I suppose.
Wow.
Oh, I had a thought about defunding the police. Do you mind if I share it with you?
Oh, please do.
One thing that I've noticed in that I think is really interesting about this particular moment of organizing is that police reform is not the language that most activists are using. I think there's like a little bit of a generational thing there, in terms of what people are really after. Older generations, from what I've seen, are interested more in police reform, or that's the language that they use, versus younger people talking about defunding the police. But I think it's interesting that like the conversation that defunding the police forces local governments to have versus police reform, right? Like the data on what does defunding the police mean, how much money do they get, what is it going towards, and what are the outcomes that are a direct result of that, I think are a lot more cut and dry than, you know, people, you know, lay people debating police reform, right? Like my own understanding of like what good is a body cam, what good is bias training for cops, does that really result in stuff? My understanding and the data is a lot less clear about that. But what we see in terms of like the facts, how these situations end up and where police resources are being used in terms of thinking about it as defunding, like we're spending a lot of money on this and it doesn't work, is a lot more cut and dry, which I think is really interesting, and that it is perhaps even more accessible to people because it doesn't require, you know, your average person to try to engage with what police tactics are good, what police tactics are bad, are police themselves bad? Like, it brings up different questions than, you know, I think what has bogged down the movement for police reform in the past, which is, no, it's only a couple of cops that are bad. There's only some people come into the profession with bad intentions.
Yeah, I mean, police reform has been around, what, for like the last 30, 40, like it's not, my humble opinion is that that's not the word, that's not it, that's not what needs to get done. Just because it's right there, like sitting and having conversation about, well, what did this person do, or what are their circumstances? Because everything is such, of course, you know, everything is going to be different. Whether you're, you know, if you're on, you know, patrolling something versus answering to a call, like everything is circumstantial. But to be able to have facts and more than that, numbers in a capitalistic society, and be able to translate the numbers to what works and what doesn't, that's just good housekeeping. That's just good, you know, bookkeeping. And then you're seeing where, you know, at the end of the day, as taxpayers, where our investments are going. And if we're seeing that there is a almost like a militia that is out to get black people and kill them and execute black people in the streets, I think that the moral conversation around it hasn't been working, because they've been doing that. Whether it's Rodney King, or whether it's Trayvon, or whether it's, I mean, you know, these are the names that I'm still thinking about, and I can't, you know, I can't even come to think about George Floyd. Like, I'm still crying over them, you know? So that hasn't been working. Having a conversation about humanity and human rights and dignity hasn't been working. Reform, what reform? Reform out the window. So, but, you know, as they say, hit them where it hurts and bring, you know, the stats, and that's something that I really respect about the way that people are handling it this time, where it is straight to policy, straight to what we're going to do it, and on a state level, you know, like these are, you know, Ted Wheeler, like he lives in this town, we live in this town, he's going to have to look at people in the eye when, you know, cops keep murdering innocent people, you know, so it's not like some figure in Washington that isn't connected to us, that doesn't know, you know, what Burnside is, you know, that doesn't know, like, what, you know, I don't know, like, you know, it's people that live here, and they know us, and it's a community. So it's amazing to see the community, how the community is taking responsibility as well, because even in that meeting, so many people were coming up and speaking about how they know they are understanding their privilege, and, you know, they just want to say that they agree, and they're yielding their time to, you know, other people that need to be at the forefront of this conversation. So, like, for example, and this is also something I want to mention, how, you know, just in the age of social media, I was on the net, and I saw a video of a older white guy basically, like, you know, low-key assaulting these two young girls, like 12 or something, because they're putting up flyers in remembrance of George Floyd. And this was on a trail of where I grew up. So I'm, you know, familiar with the area. And I look at the article, and I'm like, this last name sounds familiar. And then I send it to a friend of mine. She's like, well, of course it sounds familiar, because this is our friend's uncle. And, you know, of course I was shocked. And, you know, my first reaction is like, oh my God, I know this person. Like, are they racist? Like, what's going on? They have a mixed kid. What's going on? And then, you know, to see her almost basically like apologizing for her uncle and what he did, and then even acknowledging that the way that he, when he finally was arrested, the way that he was arrested, and how he even got to, like, drink a cup of coffee before he was arrested and taken down to the, you know, to the precinct. So it's just amazing to see how we are taking accountability as a society, and it's I'm amazed. I never thought that I'd get to, so I'm still, you know, a young buck. I never thought that I'd get to see something like, you know, in 2015, someone told me, oh, Black Lives Matter is a fringe group. Like, now it's written on 16th Street. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also important to note that the movement right now is also, you know, largely for racial justice and coming to account as a nation for all of the ways in which Black people are, you know, disadvantaged. And what I like about the idea of defunding the police, it's like, hey, we have a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, combating all of the ways that racial injustice impacts people, why don't we just not put the police in the situation where these things happen? Like, we could just stop doing that and then work on everything else, which I think is interesting in that, like, those ideas are becoming more widespread, and in becoming more widespread, in more people engaging with it, new and different solutions come to the forefront.
Yes, yes. And different eyes bring different things, you know, different perspectives and better ideas and innovation. And yeah, I totally agree with you.
And I think it's also, go ahead, please.
There's also, like, the, you know, the intersection between just, like, women's rights and you know, like, indigenous rights, just basic human rights. And I think that where we may have kind of fell short in Occupy, I think that maybe this is where we got our stuff together, we have our plan, and we're trying again, and I hope something sticks.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, you and I were kind of discussing this at an earlier time, but just thinking about all of the places that the police funding could go and how many ills of American society, that sounds harsh, but I mean it, I guess. That, like, you know, you're so used to that you, like, crack a joke about it. Like, oh, American schools, like, we say we're the best in the world, but actually we're something like 49th. In the
Or like, oh, teachers, they should totally get paid more. It's like, yeah, we can
teachers
do
really
that.
Should get paid. We could. That could happen. That could happen now. And just, like, seeing all of the things that this could touch and all of the sort of issues that maybe standing on their own don't have enough people feeling the urgency of, like, hey, we should pay teachers more. We should really invest in the education of our children. We should reform the way we do it. Like, those types of things don't have necessarily, like, the push of urgency that we see right now. And so it's so exciting to think about all of the things that the moving of police funding to different organizations and different advocacy groups and different, you know, things that the government is involved in, like education, like, seeing that could happen and that we're not just going to complain about it and sort of crack a joke because it's a little too sad to think about in a serious way, that's, like, really exciting to me.
I think of all the times when, you know, in history class, when I said, well, you know, I don't know how these people live through this stuff, and oh my goodness, I can't wait till 30 years from now and be like, oh, let me tell you stories from the quarantine times. My goodness, this is, and you know what? It's being televised and it's being broadcasted and it's being discussed. And, you know, if people like my mother and, you know, your father are, you know, taking these conversations and, you know, thinking about them, my goodness.
Yeah,
nothing is impossible.
That's not for nothing, you know. And just thinking about that, like, and, you know, and this is probably to the credit of all of the, you know, protest movements that we've seen in the past 10 years, Occupy included, that the sort of allure and the pull of the status quo, that, like, this is how we've always done this. This is how it is. What do you mean you're going to fight the system? This is just how it goes. And isn't it more painless to just go with it than to have to fight it? Like, that, the pull of the status quo, I think, has less allure because of all of these things that I think people are systemically becoming aware of. Like, most of us are, as you grow up, you become good at recognizing interpersonal injustice. What's right, what's wrong, someone at work was mean to you, something bad happened to you and it wasn't fair. Those things are something that we, like, in part of our development, we recognize. But learning to recognize problems and issues on a systemic level is something that not everybody gets challenged to do. And I think that, you know, the having all of these different movements have pushed people to be ready for that conversation in maybe a way that they weren't able to. And the whole allure of the status quo is false in itself. You know, the idea that, oh, like, this is what cops always do. Cops are like, they deal with everything. Actually, no, they don't. They haven't always dealt with anything. And this isn't how cops operate in other countries. The status quo other places is entirely different. And just thoughts like that, you know, thinking more critically, thinking about things more complexly, and trying to engage with it in a way that, you know, might have previously been inaccessible for people, but the spread of this movement, and I mean, I just speaking for myself, you know, seeing all of the different resources that are shared on social media by people mm-hmm. who I am, like, peripherally connected to, and all of the ways that people are, you know, learning to educate themselves on issues of racial justice, is really, like, it's quite striking.
Speaking of resources being shared across social media and stuff, we've had a couple requests for shouting out some of the organizations that are doing the important work, say, that are getting the funds, who would get the funds that are being reallocated away from police, and where it's going, and how folks can find them and get involved in supporting them, and maybe throwing a little cash their way to supplement them until the, you know, in the meantime.
That is a great question, Althea. Do you want me to chat a little bit while you grab that online, or just grab the online?
I got a couple off the dome, but I can find some specifics for us.
Sure,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I've also got a pretty cool looking TikTok video on tap.
I did send you a TikTok video for this.
Okay, so y'all have a plan for that?
Yes.
Then I will wait for your cue on that.
Thank you so much. Oh, and I didn't mention that. This is a radio call-in show.
Oh, someone asked if y'all were taking calls today.
So we are. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And I did want to also, you know, highlight just on we were talking about the movements the last 10 years and Occupy Now, and it wouldn't be for, like, the freaking giants that we have that have paved the way for people to be able to speak up and organize. I mean, they're people, you know, even a cable, they're like radical thought revolutionaries, you know, all spectrums of all walks of life, and, you know, all the political spectrum, just absolutely amazing. And, you know, right before this program, Angela Davis was on Democracy Now, and yeah, you know, it's kind of how are we gonna, you know, talk about racial justice and not mention, like, one of the most amazing, you know, revolutionaries that paved ways for, you know, made me, you know, someone who looks like me, to make real change and that last, I don't want to forget to, you know, highlight and shout out the OGs in the revolution, for, you know, musicians, activists, you know, medics, doulas, all of that. You're all great, and we're learning from you and innovating, and thank you for paving the way. Thank you. Have some of those resources. Oh, go ahead, Sonia.
I was thinking about how what you're saying just then reminds me of I'm medically fragile in a couple of ways that just make it not, you know, that make it particularly dangerous for me to join in the mass actions recently. And I don't have the physical stamina or energy to invest in to recover from that kind of expenditure, or say, sleeping on the floor of a holding cell. And so I think about how I spent, you know, how 20 years ago I was out, you know, marching around DC, marching around New York City, marching around San Francisco, and it's like, okay, I kind of I did that part when it was appropriate for me, and now I'm stepping back, and now we got, well, y'all stepping in and stepping up, and it's really done my heart proud to see how folks who are in their 20s today are building on what my comrades or my people in my age group had done 15, 20 years ago and are carrying everything forward. And it's like, y'all are our legacy and we love you. And thank you so much for carrying it on.
I feel the love and I send it back to you. I'll say, you have some of those resources. I know there's the bailout fund.
There's the Portland General Defense Committee has a bail fund for protesters. In terms of reinvestments of what Joanne Hardesty, the commissioner, proposed, some of that would be going towards Portland Street Response, some of it towards the Black Youth Development Fund, and I believe that Mayor Ted Wheeler's initial plan would reallocate some police funds to local advocacy groups, including Coalition of Communities of Color. And there's another thing listed on this proposal, cannabis social equity grants, and that kind of, I believe there's a few different things that goes to, but one of them is legal clinics that expungement clinics that don't shoot PDX helps put on to help folks get their records cleaned now that marijuana is legal, and also the Portland African American Leadership Fund or PALF. Those are some groups that you can find online. Not quite allowed to endorse them since this is radio, but yeah, check those guys out. There's a lot of great resources, and I'm sure that, you know, this is a good time to help out local nonprofits.
Yes, because there's also, you know, we're in the midst of this, but also with the underlining of the coronavirus. It's still there, and we were supposed to reopen today, but Kate Brown, she said, no, not today, fellas, not today, folks. So
if you want my opinion, she might be right about that.
I'm just reporting what Kate said. good friend of the show. not actually. But yeah, Kate Brown.
Our Salem
said,
correspondent, Governor Kate Brown. That's a joke. She doesn't.
Could you imagine?
our Salem correspondent for the show.
Back to you, Jubilant Althea. yeah, we were supposed to open up today in Multnomah County, but I think we had too many new cases, so we're not opening up. There's that. I never thought we would open up today. I was hopeful. I really was. But no. But that's okay.
Much as I would like to get, you know, a bubble tea and a haircut, gonna have to put it on hold.
Honestly, I don't think I could even be around. Like, I think I forgot how to socialize, so it's probably better this way.
I find myself getting, like, unnerved when people are near me in public. Like, well, I'm too close. Or watching movies. We talked about this, but, you know, you watch a movie and there's, like, a crowd.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, do you guys not see how close together you are? No, get back. Maximum.
I was going to make a joke, but I forgot the name of the movie, so. But speaking of, I'll guess, Sony, do we have any phone calls that be taking? Oh, okay.
We've got a couple of folks on the line. I believe first up we have Sean. Are you there?
Hey, good morning.
Go ahead. You're live.
Hey, in true shock doctrine fashion, the president has proposed school choice, so-called, which, you know, means privatizing schools and destroying, like, the last bastion of union strength. I've got kind of a really pessimistic take on this whole thing. I just wanted to quickly run it by and get your reaction to it. Like, Bernie Sanders, apparently, his entire democratic socialist movement has left us without a viable third party that's anti-capitalist or at least green. The whole thing seems like a Democratic Party conspiracy to just lead us down a rabbit hole and then abandon us. And so, like, my pessimism is this. It just seems like the whole direction of identity politics and taking us away from a class-based universal politics seems like another part of the shock doctrine to lead an assault on the teachers' unions and, you know, austerity and privatize everything. So what do you think of that, that the focus on racial reductionism, Adolf Reed Jr. has been talking about this a lot, racial reductionism is just another implementation of the shock doctrine. And I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate that. Althea, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the Democratic Party has historically relied on unions for a lot of its money. And I'm trying to remember the Supreme Court case. That hasn't been the case since the 90s because of the way that soft money got gutted. But as far as the argument that race, like acknowledging race, is reductionist, I think really it's a part of the whole picture. And to ignore it is actually to perpetuate the issues that, like, people of all classes, or, well, people of lower classes are facing, in not acknowledging the ways in which class issues and racial issues intersect. Like, that's intersectionality. That's acknowledging the different ways that privilege affects people, the different advantages that different people have. And, you know, this is sort of the tagline for people who are learning about white privilege for the first time, which is, just because you're white or whatever your situation is, just because you're white, no matter your, you know, socioeconomic class, white privilege doesn't tell you that your life has not been difficult. White privilege doesn't say that, you know, your life was easy or that you haven't, you know, overcome things in your life and overcome where you started out. But it does say that none of those things were made more difficult by the color of your skin. And that's a fundamental fact of it. And I would also argue that, you know, not acknowledging the racial component and not acknowledging that makes white people uncomfortable is what drives, you know, blue collar white people to Trump's side, because he will tell you that, you know, immigrants on the southern border are the ones taking your jobs, as opposed to it being corporate profits moving overseas to exploit people. And there has to be solidarity across that movement. There has to be solidarity across, like, racial lines when it comes to class, but you have to recognize that there is a major impact that race has on all of that. Tammy, do you have thoughts on that?
I agree with you, and I think I know as a black woman, I do feel like sometimes I get reduced, but I know that I'm more than that, and it's just a reality that I live with, that I, for them, and I just know, you know, I was just that black girl, like, you know. So whether the politics is reducing me, or, you know, race is reducing me, I'm getting reduced, like, either way, you know, whether it's the corona, whether it's the cop, whether it's the racist, I'm getting reduced. So, you know, when someone acknowledges that, even and especially in a setting of, like, when I am with people that are, like, labor organizers or, like, socialists or, you know, whatever, that type of stuff, it's like, I feel like a lot of times that conversation isn't present, and I feel very uncomfortable, because I feel like my struggle gets reduced, and that's when I kind of, like, I'd rather be acknowledged of being black than to, like, have my you know, struggle of blackness be reduced in a situation like that. And, you know, I could say, well, we're all working class, or, oh, we're all broke, you know, where it's like, yeah, but I'm broke and black. So, like, it's a double whammy. I just, you know, my humble black opinion. Any more callers or
yes, Sean. Okay, cool. Sean elected to take his response off the air, but I believe we have John. Are you still with us, John? We may have lost John.
Oh, it's all good. Appreciate you, anyways, John. Say anything else?
Do we want to talk about TikTok for a moment? Because there is that.
Video. So there is a video. Do you want to present it? Do you want to give a little description or just go for it?
Oh, yeah, I'll give a description. What we're going to play is the audio from this video that went viral on TikTok, talking about a lot of the statistics that people are citing right now to try to make the argument that, well, if Black people didn't want police to be there, why didn't they just not do things that the police would be interested in? And kind of rebutting that. And I know we talked a little bit earlier about how, you know, young people on TikTok are using it to, you know, expose their family members. But that part of that movement is living there, I think, is important to acknowledge. And, you know, if you're not on TikTok, give you a little taste of what it's like.
All right.
So
here,
you want to play it for us?
Here we go.
Black neighborhoods are over-policed, so of course they have higher rates of crime. And white perpetrators are undercharged, so of course they have lower rates of crime. And all of those stupid stats you keep using are operating off a small sample size. So shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up.
And credits on that to at RynnStar, RynnStar, on TikTok, and at Alex Engelberg for putting that together. Yeah, I like that little one because it sticks in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of gives you a little something to groove to. you know,
those
my mom
harmonies though.
Originally, yeah, the harmonies are great.
That's quality content right there.
And three of those voices are all one person just overlaying.
A lot of talented people on TikTok. A lot of smart and talented people on TikTok.
Yeah, there is definitely a whole, I don't want to say movement because I don't want to just, like, you know, take away the meaning of that word, but there's a whole trend of, you know, young white kids, you know, just, I mean, some of them are really going hardcore on their parents and they're just like giving them facts and it's like they just, they're obviously grounded, like, after that. Like, they, you know, this is their family, people that they don't just live with them, they're quarantined with them right now in a lot of states, you know? So they're just doing the thing. And then there's another video of a person shouting in the streets of, I think it was LA. And it's, you know, it may seem a little odd or a little peculiar to see someone just screaming about racial justice at the top of their lungs. But I have to say, I'm not even kidding, I've wanted to do that pretty much like every other day in my life. Like, that's how frustrated, like, that is the level of frustration that I get to sometimes from just like, what, why? I'm getting myself riled up just thinking about it. So it's been interesting to see that. I feel bad because they're definitely getting in trouble. But in the words of my friend who, you know, had the video of her racist uncle go viral, she's going to make Christmas awkward as heck.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's, I suppose, very kind of you to worry about, you know, the state of these kids' allowance after after this kind of action, but, you know, it's important enough, you know, and fortunately for the folks who are, you know, taking that action and confronting people, like, there are so many, like, resources out there to cite. I know that, like, I have occasionally gotten bogged down in those conversations and, like, not had the stats that I wanted to be able to, you know, set the record straight, or feeling overwhelmed by sort of the sometimes what seems willful ignorance.
Sometimes but it's a time when you're being stupid isn't enough, right? You know.
Yeah, and that, you know, again, this allure of the status quo, and that, you know, it's a lot of people aren't necessarily taught to have that ethos of, what if everything I think is actually not true? And what would the world look like if that were the case? And does that world resemble the world that we live in? Some important questions to consider. What if, you know, whatever way that you're making that argument, what if that isn't true? How would I know if it wasn't true? And being inquisitive in your own beliefs, I think, is a really powerful place for people to work from in terms of, like, trying to make change in their own lives and in, like, society as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, would you call it a renaissance almost? I don't know. It's that's a word.
Ooh, yeah, let's bring the French into this.
And while everyone is getting, you know, a new worldview or having to, you know, just look within themselves and see how they're perpetuating issues or problems and what role they play in this, you know, crazy mess that we are in, I want to point out that there are a lot of people that are, like, really hurting and have been hurting and aren't getting, you know, they aren't waking up to this because they've been living this, and it's, like, it's hard. It's really, really hard, and it's really, really painful, and it's really hard, and, like, mostly because it's beautiful to see all these people coming together. It's amazing to see thousands, I mean, millions in the world, from Ireland to what is it, to Los Angeles to, I mean, geez, you know, so many people marching, and then I also wonder, like, why did it take so many? Why did it take so many public executions for this to finally get some, what is it? Did it have to come to this point where a person is, like, did it have to come to this point? Like, what is short of a noose versus a knee, you know? It just, a vertical execution. So it's beautiful and amazing, and it's great that all these things are happening, but I do want to mention that there's a lot of people that are hurting, and, you know, whether it is Black people, people of color, people that, you know, are having to just make, don't have any more friends anymore because they're seeing them saying crazy stuff on the internet, you know, or now you're having to cut ties with family members, you know. This is a hard, hard time, so... you know, I'm just glad that we're able to have each other, you know, in this community, you know, the cable community, the Portland community, the, you know, just our friendship, and it's hard, but I definitely value this platform, and anytime that, you know, someone calls or, you know, the emails that we get, it's nice to know that we're making a difference, and being able to broadcast, like, the city council meeting yesterday, which I was very, very happy that we were able to do that, you know, hearing these things and amplifying truth and, you know, camaraderie, love, you know, that type of stuff. So I think on that note, we're just about through. Do you have anything that we didn't get to that you'd like to say?
No, I just want to thank you, Tammy, for being such a wonderful host. And Sonia for board hopping, and everyone for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
I'm gonna go watch that TikTok again when this is over.
Yes. Good stuff. I want to just, you know, remind everyone, keep washing your hands. You know, I know we've all been gathering and all, but it never hurts to wash your hands. Keep them paws clean. Thank you so much, Sonia. And take care, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Won't. Boy, don't even try to touch me. Boy, this beat is crazy. anything for me. Who run the world?
Girls, girls.
Who run the world?
Girls.
Who run the world?
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH.